And I think the myth we've been sold, which has been so unfortunate, is that entrepreneurship is an individualistic journey. You know, you're going to raise millions and sell for billions and prove to the world that you're on the cover of Inc. magazine and, you know, be this star. And it's like, well, no, that's not at all what it's like. You know, it's bad marketing, right? We've been misinformed. And so if it's about bigger impact than yourself, if it's about contribution, if it's about personal growth and development, if it's about getting into deep alignment, then you should totally do it. But if it's anything else that you think it's going to be, keep your job. However bad you think it is, it's easier, it's better.
Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go.
Welcome to another episode of Life After Corporate, my friend. If you're new to our show, this is the place to be. If you're first getting started or you've been in entrepreneurship for a year or two and you still haven't gotten the traction you want. So our guest today is Carissa Reiniger. Carissa started The Silver Lining with a mission to help small businesses become more profitable and sustainable. She's created the Silver Lining Action Plan, aka SLAP, a tech-enabled and data-driven small business growth program based on behavior change science, because we know that once you leave the corporate world, you may be in a new role, but wherever you go, there you are, and it requires some behavior change and some mindset shifts. So she has supported more than 14,000 small business owners in more than 65 countries to set and hit their goals. She's a speaker, a writer, and advises governments and corporations on how to help small business owners succeed and build a stronger economy and use business as a tool for justice. In addition to Silver Lining, she's also the founder of the Silver Lining Capital and creator of Thank You, Small Business. Welcome to Life After Corporate, Carissa.
Well, thank you, Deb. I'm very happy to be here. I'm really grateful to you for having me.
Well, this is such an important conversation because more and more women are leaving their professional roles, their senior leadership roles in corporate to launch their small business. And I don't think they really even think of it as a small business when they make the transition. And they don't always think through, well, what is it going to take to actually replace a significant six-figure salary as a coach or a consultant or other service provider? So what is some of the immediate advice? Because I know you've been in entrepreneurship a long time, and it's been a while since you've been in a corporate role. But what led you to create the Silver Lining?
Yeah, you know, I think the work that you do, Deb, is so important because to exactly the point of your question, the number one piece of advice I give people who are in a corporate job and who have achieved a high level of success, right? Most people, when they leave their corporate jobs, it's not because they're struggling. They just want a different life or they have a different vision for how they want to contribute. And it is so humbling to start a small business because it seems like running a small business would be so much more simple and so much more straightforward than having a very complex corporate job. But it is actually, I don't think it's harder, better, worse. It's just entirely different. And so what we see for so many people who are these corporate converts, right, who want to leave a big job and start a small business, is that they actually struggle more than a lot of the people that maybe never had that big corporate job before or were not as successful as, you know, we would define success. And so I'm so glad to be having this conversation with you because I think it's so important. What prompted me to start Silver Lining, I started it 19 years ago. I was 22 and I actually was working in a big corporation. I was working in a big ad agency. And my motivation was really threefold. The first was I started to have very, very, very early, you know, small success in my corporate role. And my biggest concern was, wait a minute, like, is this what I want to be known for? Is this what I want to accomplish, right? Is this what I want my, you know, career contribution to be? And it felt as values misaligned. Again, not bad, just that I work hard. I'm a hard worker. I put myself all the way into things. And so I wanted to know that whatever I was putting myself all the way into was something I genuinely cared about, I thought mattered for whatever reason to me. And then the second reason that I ironically left my corporate job is that I was trying to be very truthful and honest, and I was becoming more and more clear that this is probably not my long-term career. And so I actually went to my boss. Right, you're laughing because you can see how my naivety did not work for me. But I went to my boss and I said, listen, I don't think I'm going to do this forever. I'm not going anywhere right now, but I just want to be really honest about, you know, what I'm thinking about my career. And I was immediately pushed out, and I basically was, you know, I left within a couple of weeks from that genuinely, you know, meaningful conversation. And I realized in those moments and with hindsight, you know, there's a very specific type of person and a very specific expectation to climb a corporate ladder. And sort of the second that you realize that maybe it's not what you want, you're the other in the room. And so it was just clear that that was not my path. And it was clear that when they figured out that that was not what I really wanted, that it was not the right place for me, for anyone. So it was a misalignment, is I think if I had to use one word, right? And I think I hear people think about leaving corporate and starting a small business. I think what they're trying to solve for is misalignment most of the time. But I think what they don't take into account, which is what you have been articulating so beautifully, is that it's not going from apples to apples. It's not a lateral move. You don't gain alignment and all your success and like live a kumbaya happily ever after life. You make a move for alignment, but you basically start at the bottom of a whole new game and you have to learn it all from the beginning. And so that's the gap that I think, you know, is important that we're talking about.
Yeah, that's the gap because, you know, we're going from the great breakup to what I'm noticing, and you might be too, is the great boomerang. Is that once they realize that, oh, this is different. And I've had conversations with people who have been told that they could replace a 400K salary in their first year as a consultant. And, you know, so there's so much disinformation out there that you and I have a big mission, which is to shout it from the rooftops that this is different. It's not easy. It's hard. You need to relearn your skills. You know, you have some expertise, which is hard-earned expertise. Most of my clients are in their 30s, 40s, 50s, some even in their 60s. And this misalignment that you spoke about is what they've hit too. And so they don't want to go back to corporate. That's not why they left. And so it doesn't feel in alignment to go back. But, you know, what's your advice for when you first get started? If you were talking to one of these women who was told, you know, you can replace your six-figure salary in a year, what would you say?
I mean, I always say, first of all, beware of anyone who says that they have a program or a book or a thing that will, you know, magically make you lots of money in a short period of time. I believe to every core of my being, you know, I've got 19 years and so much data to prove it, that people can be successful building small businesses. Mm-hmm. And it takes longer than you think. It's not the path that you probably want it to look like. It takes a lot of very unsexy work. You know, it's not about creating social content that you're really excited about and building a TikTok following. It's often about making cold calls and putting yourself out there and getting rejected. I mean, there is a reality to what it takes. And in 19 years of doing this myself, building my own business and working with thousands of other people, I have never met anyone who could just hijack the process. And so I just said, my first like loud thing is there is no silver bullet to growing a small business. And anyone that claims they've got it, like walk away fast. Now, that being said, you know, directly connected to that is if it is something you really want to do, then go for it. But you've got to start with realistic expectations. So even in behavior change science, the premise of behavior change science is that we as humans are sort of poorly behaved. I'm paraphrasing, but we're not greatly behaved on our own. And so we need outside structure and support, and we need some formula wrapped around ourselves if we really want to optimize our behavior to achieve an outcome. But what I think is so interesting in the science, one of the most interesting parts of behavior change science is that first you have to be committed to the outcome. Mm-hmm. So to your point, you can't just leave your corporate job because you don't like it, right? You can't be walking away from something. If I think to be successful as a business owner, you have to be running, toward something. There's got to be a thing that you want to deliver, a point of view you want to bring to the world, a product or a service that you are so passionate about creating and selling and delivering that you are running towards a vision. So just leaving corporate because you don't like it is not a good enough reason to start a small business. It's got to be something that you're so committed to that you're willing to do the hard stuff because it matters beyond, you know, replacing an income, right? All these things that you hear people say, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's all the wrong reasons to start a small business. But tied to that, right after being committed to the outcome, which is the number one thing in behavior change, right? None of us will ever be successful at any goal we set if we don't genuinely want it, like deep inside of us. But the second thing is set modest goals. So the science literally says, right, don't set a goal. Don't set an audacious goal. Don't set a big, hairy goal. Set a modest goal. Set a goal that you actually have the time and the money and the energy and the resources to deploy against to accomplish. And so those are the two big, at the very, very core behavior change science, most people leaving a corporate job are misstepping in those fundamental things that have to be true in order to get to success. And so that's what I would want people to like think about. If you don't have something you want enough, then it's maybe not time to leave your job yet, or it's time to think about some, you know, a plan C. Maybe your current job is A, starting a small business is B. There might be lots of plan C's to consider. If you have something you want so much that you can't not do it, then yes, let's start that small business. But then let's be really realistic about what it will take to make it work.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you just said so much. I want to unpack a couple of things. So number one is launching a business isn't sexy. And it's also not the latest, brightest, shiny object in marketing and where to show up online. And that's one of the most common mistakes that most new entrepreneurs make. You know, they'll buy an 8-week course on how to leverage LinkedIn. Well, if you haven't done the basic business foundations of doing market research, talking to real human beings, understanding your why and, you know, why you're here, what is that impact that you want to make through your work? What are you passionate about? What are you convicted about? If you don't have any of that, then don't market anything because it's not going to work.
Yes.
So, and I wish that we could get this message to every single woman who is even thinking about leaving corporate, because it's the unsexy stuff that you mentioned, like finding where the gap is in the market, finding where your skills can be uniquely packaged and sold to do some good in the world. And to solve a problem that people have that's costing them heartache, money, time, all of the things, right? So love to hear from you what the SLAP playbook is all about. And, you know, how do you get in front of the right entrepreneurs? And is this just for women or all business owners?
Okay, yeah. So it is for all business owners. I'll talk about SLAP in the context of what you just said. What you just said is so important. I mean, I just think that your message is so important. I'll give you two just funny stats to back up what you're saying, which are SLAP stats. And so it'll be a good segue into SLAP. One of them is that when we have a small business build an action plan for how to go out and grow their business, there is a section of campaigns that they can choose from, which are like digital marketing. So create a TikTok account or build your website, things that are very... Yes, they matter, but are they the most critical thing? 95% of our businesses go to that section and add those campaigns to their slaps. Now, the other types of campaigns are things like hit lists, which is basically build a list of 100 people and call them, referrals, right? Things where you're putting yourself on the line a little bit, you're asking for sales. Those convert to sales at about a 90% consistency. If a small business does them, they generate more sales all the time. But it is only about 5% of small businesses that choose to add them to their SLAP. We have to convince them and negotiate with them and plead with them to think about doing that type of work instead of like the marketing work, because we know it's what will lead to sales. So just to double down on what you're saying, our instincts are that I think if we haven't done it, we think that entrepreneurship is like building things and going to networking events and marketing. That's not what it is. That's like 2% of it. But the other 98% of it is what's so critical. And all of our data shows that it is our natural instinct to want to do the things that are not actually going to lead us to sales or revenue and to not do the things that will. So that's just a stat for you. And then the other thing you said that I just want to point out too, we talk a lot about mindset at Silver Lining, and we help small business owners think a lot about their resilience, their mindset, the foundation that they as a human have to build their business off of. And one of the big mistakes I see people making is that they start a small business because they're burnt out in their current job. And if you start a small business when you're burnt out, the chance of success is zero, because to your point, the type of thinking you're talking about, I mean, it requires some space, some energy, some real strategy, as opposed to, you know, taking a course on LinkedIn. And so I want to say that out loud too. We see so much that if business owners are in what we call a stage of stuck, busy, overwhelmed, burnt out, their chance of success goes down dramatically. It has nothing to do with their capability. They just don't have the internal oomph to do what's required to succeed. So if you're listening and you're feeling burnt out and you feel like that's the reason you need to leave your job, my suggestion is go on a vacation. Don't start a small business. Take a month off and honestly, go sit on a beach, get back to yourself, and then make a decision about your career from a really healthy point of view. That all being said, what Slap is really quickly. So we built a platform that helps small business owners from any background, any industry, any gender association around the world set and hit their financial goals. And so we help a business owner in about a 2-hour process go through a very guided, prompted system of understanding what they do, who they do it for, the scale they want to do it on, understanding of their financials, their expenses, their revenue, their pricing, their profit, to arrive at sales goals. Because at the end of the day, we need to make sure these businesses are profitable and sustainable. And then it builds a 12-month action plan, which are all of the ways that you can go out into the world to connect with your ideal client and find new customers. Once the plan is built, it's a 12-month goal that you set. And so for the next 12 months, we wrap all of the pillars of behavior change around you as a small business owner to give you one-on-one calls, unlimited one-on-one calls, data-driven insights about actions you can do to modify your behavior to increase your chance of success, access to a peer community of small businesses from, you know, 76 countries around the world that you can learn from, go to group meets with, buy from, connect with. And then access to resources like capital if you need it, or one-on-one calls with people who have built successful businesses, or EAs. We have all these sort of things that, you know, once you've demonstrated basic good behavior and you have been able to crack the code of how you can align your actions against the results that you want, you can, based on your behavior in our software, earn access to additional resources to try to get your business to the next level. So it's a really beautiful sort of tech-enabled, data-driven platform, you know, technology-based, obviously, but really that facilitates deep human connection with a very specific purpose. It really is about upskilling small business owners to be more strategic and more effective at generating a profitable, you know, sustainable revenue that allows them to have the impact they want to have in the world.
Amazing. I want to ask you some more questions about that. And before we do, I also want to acknowledge what you said. You know, if you're burnt out, if you're in a bad place, now's not the time to start your business. I mean, entrepreneurship is a spiritual journey. I say that all the time. It's, you know, you're going to grow and evolve as an individual. You will be forced to face and release some of the patterns that have not served you and are not serving you now. And those are the things, those are the mindset traps that are keeping you doing the right things at the wrong time, like going for the website, going for the branding, going for the social media, because it's fake progress, right? Yeah. It makes you feel like you have a business, but you don't have a business until you have a client and you're making money.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, right. Deb, I love you so much. Yes, I agree so much. We're so aligned. I've said about my own journey that it is like I get celebrated with outsized praise for my good things. I get criticized with outsized judgment for my failures by others and myself, right? I am exposed to my, you know, poor behavior constantly and the consequences of it. I'm under pressure all the time. And by the way, the bigger the business gets, the more pressure there is, the more customers, the more problems, the more staff, the more risk. So it's not like it gets better, right? It gets harder. It gets harder. And so I just want to say to people, this is not fun. I happen to love it. But if I did not care so deeply about what I was doing, there is absolutely no way this would be worth it. And so it is, I think your comment about being a spiritual journey is so astute, because I think if you really understand what you're in it for, right, it's got to be for some sort of bigger impact beyond yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's got to be because there's some process you're willing to go through as an individual to constantly learn and grow and adapt and recenter and reground. And I think the myth we've been sold, which has been so unfortunate, is that entrepreneurship is an individualistic journey. You know, you're going to raise millions and sell for billions and prove to the world that you're on the cover of Inc. magazine and, you know, be this like star. It's like, well, no, that's not at all what it's like. You know, it's bad marketing, right? We've been misinformed. And so if it's about bigger impact than yourself, if it's about contribution, if it's about personal growth and development, if it's about getting into deep alignment, then you should totally do it. But if it's anything else that you think it's going to be, keep your job. However bad you think it is, it's easier, it's better. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, keep the comfort of the corporate paycheck.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your journey, because you've been doing this for a long time. And like you said, the more successful you get, the bigger you get, the more challenges that you have to face. What is the number one or the one or two lessons that you've learned in the last, what was it, 19 years? 19 years. So as you look back, what are some of the challenges or the opportunities for growth that you went through along the way?
Yeah, I mean, so many is the reality. We'd need a lot of episodes. I mean, I always say, I say I've made every mistake in the book. And everyone who is honest also has, right? Like for some reason, we just don't seem able to learn from each other enough to avoid the exact same mistakes that we all make. I mean, my biggest one, it took me 15 years to figure this out. So, I mean, I think I'm just starting to understand it, but like we cannot do it alone. It is not a solo journey. And as humans, right? Not just as business owners, but as humans, I think it is easy to feel so embarrassed about where we're not more successful than we want to be. It's easy to feel ashamed that we're not making more money, or that something that, you know, we think everyone else has gotten figured out, we have not, or we keep stumbling over the same mistake. You know, there's so many hard things that I've, you know, been through and, you know, created in my own life because of my own mistakes. And my instinct, my first go-to when I screw up is to blame myself, feel bad, and like think I've got to fix it, you know, but to protect everyone else, kind of, but obviously also protect myself. And that every single time I get brave enough to like just tell the truth and say what I'm struggling with and say what I think I've messed up, there are other people who have been in the exact same position, who have built businesses that have gone through the exact same thing. And so I'm still not perfect at it. I'm much better at it, but like just dealing with much more honestly how hard it is, and the embarrassment and the shame and the failure and the days where you wake up and think, oh my God, like,
what am I doing?
Seriously, right? And I'm like, I said to one of my therapists once, I'm like, I cannot figure out if I am like a genius or an absolute total loser. Like, it is unclear to me. And he was so helpful. He said, Krista, you're probably both. You're doing really incredible work and you're a human. You're going to screw it up, and some days you're a loser. And I was like, and so just reconciling that has probably been a huge part of my journey, and just getting to the point where I embrace outside support as opposed to feeling somehow like it is a testament to my, you know, lack of ability or lack of strength. I think the second thing, and you know, this matters at all stages of business, is, and it's connected, but getting the right people around you. You know, if you're about to do something, you've got to have the right people around. You know, if you're a solopreneur, you're just starting out, that's not going to be staff. That's not the right answer. But you could hire someone like you, Deb, or you could bring in an advisory group, or you could have a best friend that's an accountability partner. And then, you know, as I've grown Silver Lining, I have the opposite issue, ironically, where now it's about really finding and hiring the right executive team and building in, you know, layers of management that can take the business to the next level. So, you know, business is people. We all may, you know, be an expert in something. We may sell and market something. We may deliver something, but we are building things for other people, and we are selling to other people, and we are people. And so embracing the humanness of business, both our own and the reality of who we need to be around to succeed is what I would wish everyone really, really, really felt deeply inside. Not as a strategy on a piece of paper, but as a value set or as an orientation from which they grew their businesses. But it's certainly been my journey.
Yeah, community and accountability, I think, are two really key aspects of stepping into entrepreneurship that are undervalued, right? So, and I started observing that with my clients when I started incorporating retreats into our programs, and the relationships that were built there went so deep, and collaborations happened, and the people who went away on retreat together renewed together. They wanted to stay in the program together. And so that is so important. And the other thing we did was introduce pods, which were small groups within our larger groups.
I love that.
For accountability or co-working. My question for you, Carissa, is who inspires you? Who's your role model right now? Like, who do you look up to for inspiration?
You know, I am struggling with this question right now. So it's a good question, because I actually, so vulnerably, one of my beliefs as a business leader is that the intersection of our wellness, mental and physical, mm-hmm. our profit as business leaders, and justice in the world, right? Impact and systems change, that those three things are actually not opposing forces like we've been taught, but actually that they're deeply aligned. And if one of them's a little out of whack, then nothing's going to work properly. And so I spend a lot of my time and energy studying and researching and trying to learn about wellness, profit, business, and justice. And it's very hard. I have not found other business leaders that are so interested in the intersection of those three things and the alignment of those three things. So I have incredible people that I admire who are experts in each of those three areas. But I would say I'm searching for peers, mentors, you know, people that I can look up to, thought leaders who are really, like me, focused on the intersection of the three of them. That being said, though, what I'll also say, the people that I pull most inspiration from truly are the small businesses that we work with. You know, again, we live in a culture of entrepreneurship where we're all obsessed with some, you know, little dude who raised millions and sold for billions, you know, from all of his dad's friends at the local VC firm, you know. But what I see every day, what I get the benefit of witnessing and being a teeny tiny part of is, you know, small business owners, many of whom are women, who come from every background one could imagine, who oftentimes were born into lives where they do not have privilege and power and, you know, I assumed opportunity, who in many instances get displaced from the country they were born in. I mean, all of these very real life experiences, and to go through all of that and then have the audacity and the courage to build something, to start something from scratch, to do this thing that we're talking about is so hard. I just think that so many of the people that we would walk by on the street and sort of deem as unimportant or unsuccessful, you know, these very small businesses around the world, are honestly some of the most incredible human beings I have ever encountered. So, I mean, I'm so lucky. I genuinely get a huge, huge amount of inspiration from the small businesses that we get to work with.
Yeah, that is such a great point. And I have someone I want to introduce you to who I believe is at the intersection of those three things.
Oh, great.
Yes. And you just came back from Australia. She's actually in Australia, but I'll make that introduction later. And it's also true that the more successful you get as a woman entrepreneur in business, the fewer role models there are to choose from. But yes, I agree. The inspiration from the people I work with just touch me every day. It's like I cry in our client meetings. It's just so inspirational to watch people move forward. And just lastly, before we close this up, would love to get your words of wisdom for women entrepreneurs. So I know that just culturally, women are conditioned to be worth less. And that impacts pricing, it impacts confidence, it impacts going for bigger deals. You know, what is your advice specifically for women entrepreneurs getting started when they don't have that proof, they don't have that track record, and they're trying to come up with a value for their time when no one's buying your time? they're buying your expertise, but you know, what is your experience with women in pricing and stepping into their true value?
Yes. Oh, Deb, you're asking such all the right questions. You're so good at what you do. So one of the most frustrating stats we have, and I say this as a female, not as the CEO of Silver Lining, is that our female customers are 42% less profitable than our male customers because they require so much extra nudging and support and calls to help them do the same thing. They're equally capable. Again, this is not a capability issue. This is a confidence issue. This is a worth issue. This is a conditioning issue. So when they do the same things as their male counterparts, they are just as successful, if not more successful, for the record. I mean, so many of the women in SLAP are far outpacing their male counterparts. But that initial element of getting into action, of making the call, of making the ask, requires, for the women that we've certainly worked with over all these years, a lot of extra support, a lot of extra nudges, because it's so hard for us, for them, for us. And so, I mean, I just see it. I mean, we have, again, 14,000 small businesses, probably 10,000 of those have been women in 76 countries around the world. And this is systemic on every continent, in every race, from every religion, in every age group. Like, we are just chronically so hard on ourselves. We chronically make it so much harder than it needs to be, because we are stuck in loops of questioning ourselves. I had this fascinating conversation with a friend of mine the other day who was talking about how she was oppressed. And I was like, well, yeah, of course. If we're a woman, we're oppressed, of course, to varying degrees based on a number of factors. And I said, but what I worry about, and we can't stop fighting for equality, but how much have we been conditioned to the point where we're participating in our oppression now? We are the oppressors. I would argue that I'm the greatest oppressor of myself at this point. And so, like, what am I going to do my own work to get out of my way and just go for it? So I say all that to say that if I was going to do like three tips, increase your prices by 25%. And they will still be too low. I don't care what your prices are. I don't care what industry you go. I just don't care any. Just 25%. Just try it. Give it a go. Just try. Just trust me.
You won't die.
nothing's going to happen. It's going to be fine. So, and if it really is a disaster, you can roll it back. But I would say increase prices by 20%. In general, women are probably more like 50% under where they should be.
Yes, I agree.
And 25%, no one's even going to notice, quite honestly. So 25% price increase, number one. Number two, I really think women, we are relational. And so we do get motivation and we do get strength from other people. That's part of our natural makeup. And so, like the pods you're talking about, Deb, like your program, like, get into a community with a couple of other women and get other voices in your ear. Because actually, women are fabulous at giving advice to other people and really often know what to do. We are just so mired in our own, you know, self-oppression that we can't hear it for ourselves. So make sure you've got other voices in your ear. I always say to my friends, like, I don't trust my own voice. She's not a helpful person. She's smart, but she is not helpful. And so I need other voices that I do trust to give me better advice than I think my voice gives myself. So get outside voices. And then the third thing, and I really mean this, is I think it's a deeper, much more philosophical mindset shift that will take us, you know, unfortunately, I think a long time. But I think still as women, even if we are successful in corporate jobs or we've started small businesses, we still think somehow that, you know, we're not being caring enough. If we work a lot, you know, we have been so conditioned to caretake for others. And I just wish women understood, like, if you're making money and you're creating jobs and you're creating economy and you're, you know, creating like work and goodness in the world through transactions that you do, that is an act of care. And if women, and when women have more control of the economy and how jobs are created and how businesses are run, we're going to create a more well society. And it's not about being better or worse than men, and it's not anti-men. It's that we have a different leadership style, and our natural and innate leadership style is what the world does need in this moment, I would argue. And so, like, our success matters. We need to get out of our way. And if we can't do it for ourselves, which I don't know we're ever going to be able to do it for ourselves because of how deeply conditioned we are, then we have to do it for the collective. And what I know about women is we are motivated about caring for the collective. So let's just redefine what it means to care for the collective. And I think every woman that succeeds it is an act of justice, and it is a contribution to broader systems change that the world desperately needs right now. So we got to do it. We've got to do the work to figure this out.
We got to do the work to figure it out. And entrepreneurship is the new feminist movement. Let's go there together. Let's go there collectively. Carissa Reiniger, this has been a fantastic conversation. I don't want it to end, but let's let our listeners know how they can learn more about Silver Lining and the SLAP playbook.
Yeah, so if you go to slapcenter.com, so it's just www.slapcenter.com. I'm a Canadian, so I always have to clarify for global audiences if it's R-E or E-R. It's E-R at the end, center.com. All the information is there. We have an access for all policy. And so if you're in a financial reality where you can't pay the full price for it, you basically set the amount that your business can afford to pay when you check out. And our mission is to help anyone who is committed and really willing to set that realistic goal and then do what's required to hit it. If that's you, we're in it with you. We want you to be nothing but successful. So go to slapcenter.com. There's also a lot of free resources there, a lot of stuff that can hopefully be helpful to you. Yeah, but let us know how to help.
Carissa, thank you for the work that you're doing in the world. And thank you for being a great guest on Life After Corporate.
Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing. It's so important.
All right, my friends, that's it for this episode. Tune in next week for more engaging advice about how to launch and grow a sustainable coaching or consulting practice. See you next time. Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.